This is a CBC podcast.
Support for delivery of this podcast comes from Chevrolet. At Chevrolet, we bring people together with the things that matter to them most. Visit Chevrolet.gm.ca.
Welcome to Newfoundland and Labrador this week. I'm John Soper. In this episode, a man with a mental illness says he was treated like an animal when an RCMP officer tasered him 2 months ago. The provincial government opts for prudent spending after reporting a surplus approaching $900 million. One of the complainants against Dr. Sean Buckingham expresses glee at his conviction on sexual assault and drug trafficking charges. A move to give all provincial government offices a broadband connection aims to help consumers as well. And a program in a low-income neighborhood in Corner Brook gives students help with homework. This week, the RCMP Complaints Commissioner recommended the force restrict the use of tasers and give officers more rigorous training on how to properly use the weapons. A man from Harbour Grace, who has both a mental illness and a heart condition, knows firsthand what a taser can do. In October, Brian Pike's health worsened and his family called in the police. Pike says instead of helping, the officer used his taser twice. Here and Now's Deanne Fleet spoke with Bruce Pike about his experience.
Well, why don't you start from the beginning? What happened?
Like, when I get sick, it's kind of like a panic situation for me. Plus, with my physical problems, if I got to contact anyone by phone, it's next to impossible. But I went to my father's, was having problems, insisted that he call my GP in the Harbour Grace, and he kind of refused, and instead called the RCMP. And when the RCMP came, the first thing is they're pretty aggressive, and it's, you know, you're coming with me, I'm taking you to the Waterford. And of course the answer was no, I'm not going nowhere. Kind of dragged me from the living room to the kitchen and used a taser. So there was no warning. I wasn't what you call overly resisting, just simply didn't want to go. And the taser was used twice, one after the other, and ended up in the Waterford.
How agitated were you?
Agitated? No, I wasn't really agitated. But because of the treatment I received at the Waterford for a number of years, which under the wrong diagnosis, it's just a place where I don't want to be. It brings back too many memories. And it's probably more like a kid where I just trying to get away from his father. You know, I just not going nowhere. I'm not going, and that's pretty well it.
They wanted you to leave. They called the RCMP. Tell me about that. He came in. He said what?
He said, I'm going to take you to the Waterford. And then just automatically my response was, no, I'm not going anywhere.
And then what happened?
I was dragged from the living room to the kitchen. And without warning, he used the taser. And from there to the car.
What was it like when you were hit with a taser?
It was pretty painful. It's not an experience that I would want to go through again. I didn't actually see the taser, but I heard a rapid clicking. And, of course, experienced quite a lot of pain. I kind of doubled over a little bit. And from that point, I was handcuffed behind the back and taken to the car.
So you were shot with the taser twice?
Yes.
And what did the taser do to you?
It actually burned my side. And, of course, I experienced quite a lot of pain.
Do you think he had to shoot you with that taser?
It wasn't called for. There was absolutely no reason to use it.
How was he going to get you into the car otherwise?
Physically, I just simply cannot put up a struggle. There's, like I say, 14 health problems, and just simply not able to put up a struggle of any kind.
But you said he dragged you into the living room.
Just grabbed hold to my right shoulder and just, come, you know, a little bit aggressive. And my response was more verbal than physical.
Did you resist in any way physically?
I did try to get away, but really did not put a lot of effort into it.
What do you think that RCMP officer should have done then to get, if you didn't want to go, if you said you weren't going, how should...
He should have approached me in the proper manner just simply by talking to me, just to assure me that I'm not going to be harmed, and should have contacted my GP, Dr. Power.
So why do you think he tasered you?
I really don't know. There was absolutely no cause for it to be done. There was no warning or indication that he was going to do it. Just simply uncalled for.
What, have you made a complaint to the police RCMP Complaints Commission?
I'm the one that's mentally ill. It's very unlikely that they would take my word for any problem. It's just simply my word against theirs.
You did call a lawyer. What were you hoping when you called a lawyer? What, you know?
People should know that someone who suffers from mental illness are not someone that should be treated like an animal.
Bruce Pike speaking with Here and Now's Deanne Fleet. The RCMP officer involved confirmed that Pike had been tasered. He wouldn't do an on-air interview, but the officer says at the time he believed Pike's sister had been hurt and his family was frightened. He also said Pike was resisting arrest under the Mental Health Act. Meanwhile, Pike's lawyer has told CBC he will file a complaint with the RCMP's Complaint Commission. I'm John Soper, and you're listening to Newfoundland and Labrador This Week. $882 million, give or take a couple hundred thousand. That's how big the provincial government's surplus is now projected to be for this fiscal year. Back in April, Finance Minister Tom Marshall predicted a surplus of $261 million. But now, thanks to the high price of oil and nickel, the surplus has more than tripled. The government plans to use some of it to buy an equity stake in the White Rose and Hebron oil projects. It's also going to pay $345 million in cash to provide promised infrastructure improvements to roads, schools, healthcare, etc. Not having to borrow that money will reduce the province's debt by $700 million. Here's some of what Tom Marshall had to say about the surplus this week.
Every investment must reflect long-term sustainability, and it must serve to strengthen and to transition and diversify our economy so that we're ready for the day when the oil and gas revenues are gone, and someday they will be gone. Windfall oil and oil revenues today, and they are windfall revenues, have presented our province with a great opportunity, and it's one that the government and the people of this province must take full advantage of. And I refer to an editorial in the Telegram today, which said that in good times, you have to lay the groundwork for how you plan to live through the hard times. And that's advice we have to follow. We must remain vigilant, prudent, and responsible in our fiscal deliberations. And we have to use to every means that we have to ensure that the long-term public interest of the province is protected and we lay a solid foundation for our children and our grandchildren. We can't leave future generations with a debt of $12 billion and say that the revenues from oil and gas, we use them up today. We've got an opportunity. You know, we've got these windfall revenues. We have this opportunity that no government has had in the past, and we can't blow that opportunity. I mean, we have to be responsible. We have to be prudent. If we put it on the debt and continue to do so, I'm not suggesting 100% go on the debt. I mean, we have to keep this balance. We have to keep investing. We have to keep our poverty reduction strategy going. We have to increase looking at our revenues and possibly lowering taxes further and continuing to make strategic investments, all designed to transition the economy, diversify the economy, so that when the oil and gas is gone, we've got a strong and vibrant economy. That's the goal. But we can't blow this opportunity. We haven't done enough on the debt side, the debt reduction side. really at budget time, we were talking about $5.6 billion in revenue, and we were only planning to put $66 million down on the net debt. That's not enough. So we need more balance, and we have to seize this moment and seize this opportunity.
Finance Minister Tom Marshall. Yvonne Jones is the leader of the Liberal Party. She spoke with Ted Blades of On The Go.
Well, it's certainly a nice surplus budget, and I guarantee you we can certainly use it in Newfoundland and Labrador as well. But I think that their decision to pay down the debt is a good decision. I think we need to move towards creating more independence amongst Newfoundlanders and Labradorians, and certainly being able to provide for success for future generations in our province. And one of the ways, I guess, when it comes to getting our house in order is looking at the debt. And now when you have windfall profits, it's certainly a time to be able to do that.
What about that clamor now to spend the money on other things other than the debt?
Well, probably where I defer with government most is in terms of how the money should be spent or invested over and above paying down the debt. But I also think we have to look at a broader picture as well, and that is that right now, today, we still have a province with 13 to 15% of the people that are unemployed. And if you're looking at being a half province by 2009, you're not going to do that with a 13.5% unemployment rate. You also need to look at the fact that we still have a net loss of people in Newfoundland and Labrador out migrating. While there are numbers of people moving in on an annual basis, there's still greater numbers of people that are exiting the province.
What would you do differently than Mr. Marshall did?
Well, I think we need to focus on the industry sectors in Newfoundland and Labrador. Right now, our industries, especially those that are built around renewable resources, are having a difficult time. I mean, competing in a very changing global market. And I mean, we're seeing significant changes taking place in the fishery, in the forest sector, all resulting in reductions in employment, closures of industry, and having a huge impact on the dynamics economically for Newfoundland and Labrador. And I think these are areas where government needs to start concentrating more of its efforts. And in doing so, I think what you'll see is a stronger, healthier province that doesn't just exist in an area that's built around an oil industry, but also exists all over Newfoundland and Labrador.
Liberal opposition leader Yvonne Jones. I'm John Soper, and you're listening to Newfoundland and Labrador This Week. This week, Dr. Sean Buckingham was convicted on 12 counts of sexual assault and drug trafficking. This woman coming up had testified Buckingham sexually assaulted her in his office. The St. John's doctor was acquitted on her complaint, but she was still satisfied with the overall outcome of his trial. She didn't hold back when talking with reporters the day after the jury delivered its verdicts.
I'm glad he got convicted of the sexual assault charge. He got 12 charges he got found guilty on, and I will be there on the 20th to see what his sentencing is.
Why are you glad?
Because what he done with all of us girls, including myself and others, he deserves what he gets. He's a scumbucket. And he's going to get what he deserves, what he got coming to him. This is more than a Christmas gift to me, my darling. This was an absolute amazing news that I heard last night from my girlfriend. She was one of the other girls that was involved. It's an absolute amazing Christmas gift. Me and her cannot get no better of a Christmas gift than we got today and last night when we found out that he got found guilty. I've been waiting for this for almost 2.5 years when this first started, and after he got charged, he was driving past, waving at us, licking his tongue out at us. Like I said, it's a Christmas gift that I never thought that I would have, that I did get. And I will be sitting down, having a beer and smoking a big fat joint, waving to Sean during Christmas Day and saying, hi, looks good on you what you got. I have no remorse for him.
On December 20th is the sentencing hearing. Are you going to be there?
Yes, I will be.
Do you expect other people to be there?
I don't know if a lot of the girls are going to show up due to, like, you know, of them being scared and confidentiality and stuff, but I have nothing to hide, and I will be there with bells on. I can't wait to see what happens, and I hope he gets life. I hope he don't just get 5-6 years. He don't deserve that. He deserves life. He deserves what he has coming to him after what he done to all those girls and what he put us girls through. Sean Buckingham was not someone that was a very quiet person. Sean was outspoken. Sean was well-known. There was a couple occasions that I had cops called on me at Sean's office due to the fact of Sean being very gross and degrading and me freak out and he'd call the cops. So yeah, it's been ongoing, like I said, and it's the best Christmas gift that us girls can get right now is him in jail behind bars where he belongs.
Did you ever have a substance abuse problem yourself?
No, I'm not a drug head at all. I don't do drugs. I don't drink. No pills. I'm not into any of that. And like I said, he's going to get what he deserves. And whatever it is, it better be more than 10 years, because he deserves way more than that. A man can go out and hit somebody and get 10 years. He got 12 counts of sexual assault and trafficking. He should get life. He should not be out on the streets. He's scum. He's absolutely scum. He doesn't deserve to be out on the streets whatsoever. And like I said, it's the best Christmas gift that I can ever imagine to have this Christmas. To be with my kids and knowing that he's behind bars, that he's not going to be stalking me out no more. He's not going to be driving past my house. He's not going to be waving to me and licking out his tongue. And I don't have to worry about that anymore. He's in jail. I can actually walk down the roads and not be scared anymore for my own safety. One thing I will say, police did do an absolutely amazing job, an absolute amazing investigation to this, to the point that where he is right now. And I'm very happy with it all, the overcome of it all.
Thanks for talking to us.
You're most certainly welcome. You're very welcome. Have a great day.
That was a woman who testified she was sexually assaulted by Dr. Sean Buckingham. A court order prevents us from using her name. Sean Buckingham will be sentenced December 20th. If you're listening to this podcast in rural Newfoundland and Labrador, it probably took a very long time to download. Thanks for your patience. But there could be some relief coming. The provincial government is planning a province-wide network to give its offices a high-speed link to the internet. The government is looking for proposals from telecommunications companies to build and manage the network. Trevor Taylor is Minister of Industry, Trade and Rural Development. He told reporters the government business should be an incentive to provide internet services to the rest of us.
The incentive would be that, you know, right now in some communities, you take Grosmorne area, for example, I mean, there are half a dozen communities there that have some government presence. Right now, they don't have broadband access. You take Norris Point and Woody Point, two examples. You know, those two communities, you know, probably cost around $300,000 to put the physical, you know, the node in there, the piece of infrastructure in order to connect up the, you know, the people. And there's really no business case right now for Alliant or Rogers or Persona or whomever, you know, any telecommunications provider to actually go in there and spend that kind of money. We will, you know, that piece of infrastructure will now have to go in those communities because we have a physical presence in Norris Point and we have a physical presence in Woody Point, for example, in the form of school, courthouse, hospital, what have you. Once that piece of infrastructure is there, there's absolutely nothing then that would stop the company financially from approaching CRTC looking for authority to be able to offer internet services to those people. So that's the incentive.
So the idea is a private company builds the government network and then piggybacks on that network to hook up private individuals and private companies and expand its customer base that way.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the thing. There are a number of holes in the service, so to speak, around the province right now. So what we would expect is the 219 communities that now have a physical government presence in them, there will be broadband provided, and the infrastructure will be put in place in order to provide broadband to government offices and what have you. Once that's done, there, you know, the infrastructure is physically there. Then it's a matter of an application process for the private carrier with CRTC, and you know, as you know, past experience has been that that the service, once the physical infrastructure is there, the people will be. Will be connected.
Approval probably wouldn't be difficult to get. I mean, bringing high-speed broadband to a rural area is really something the CRTC has been encouraging.
Right. I mean, we don't foresee any problem with CRTC approval. And you know, the real impediment to providing broadband to a lot of communities thus far has been the physical infrastructure. In many cases, the fiber is actually there. If you look at the Grosmorne area, fiber is actually strung through Grosmorne National Park right now. The issue has always been, or has been since the fiber was strung, was actually the $300,000 approximately to put the node in and to connect people up.
Now, what if the private company decides that there still isn't really a business case for it, and or it's just perhaps not interested in doing it because it had to service and provide service to all these customers? Have you got a backup plan to maybe offer further encouragements or do it as government?
No, I mean, we can't force anybody to offer service to the private sector. But, you know, we have a request for proposals here. You know, the proposals will be evaluated based on a whole variety of factors. You know, price will be one, obviously. But, you know, an innovative approach to providing service to as many people as possible in the province will also be a factor that will be considered in the evaluation process.
If those services are offered, what could it mean for the residents in those communities?
Well, from a safe a business in Woody Point, for example, who's involved in the tourism industry, and you know they want to they do online bookings with their bed and breakfasts or what have you. You know, right now is fairly difficult for them to put the kind of web-based information out there to customers who might be visiting Gros Morne, for example. You know, once they have broadband and the kind of connectivity that will be available once this is done, you know, they will be much more competitive and they'll be able to communicate in a much more much easier way than they currently do over the internet.
Trevor Taylor's Minister of Industry, Trade and Rural Development. Here's a great gift for a child any time of the year. The Dunfield Park Community Center in Corner Brook has a program to help children who do their homework. Here's the CBC's Sherry Wheeler with that story.
Ring-a-ding-ding, I hear bells. It must be Santa with his reindeer and his sled.
It's an average day at Homework Haven. 8-year-old Austin Keogh reads while a volunteer helps him with the harder words. Austin reads whenever he comes here. He doesn't always want to, but he has a good incentive, especially if he comes to the center 3 days out of the week.
If you keep on coming 3 times a week, you'll get the sign. Steve will sign you up for sport.
That's the way it works here at Homework Haven. If you work hard, you're rewarded.
Down our chin.
Steve Huxer is the program coordinator at the Dunfield Park Community Center. He runs Homework Haven and believes this program is really important, especially for the area.
It's a great place just to come sometimes to learn, especially get their homework done is one. That's a great benefit. Two, they get to do their science centers and math centers and art centers and game centers after they completed their homework and their finishing their snack. There's other centers there that are educational based but still fun. But the main benefit is just, like I said, is getting the homework and stuff done, because we believe that education is the key and getting some of these kids on the right track and get them into a different, I guess, opportunity than they normally would have.
Dunfield Park is a subsidized housing area on the west side of Corner Brook. Huxter says there are a lot of great people in this neighborhood, but it's not an easy place to be a kid.
In this community, drugs is an issue right now. Just so much stuff that kids have to deal with that they normally wouldn't have to if I don't know, it's a tough question, I guess, in that aspect. But for the most part, kids in this area are seeing a lot more drugs than they probably normally should at that age.
Word number one, ready? Anyone.
A-N-Y-O-N-E.
Dinner time.
D-I-N-N-E-R-T-I-M-E.
Keisha Tucker practices her spelling words with a friend. She's only in grade 4, but she already knows how important her homework is.
Usually last year when we had a spelling test, I didn't get usually all of them right, but this year I'm getting them all right. E-V-E-R-T-H-I-N-G.
That's good news for Keisha for a few reasons. If she does her homework here just about every day, she gets to go to gymnastics as a reward. She says it also makes school more fun.
Usually in school, when we don't have done, we get detention, and I don't like getting into detention, and I really love summer because it's fun.
It's lunchtime at CC Lachlan. All the kids are outside playing in the snow. This is the closest elementary school to Dunfield Park, and a lot of the younger kids attend here.
Why don't you do up your coat? It's really cold out.
Bonnie Butler makes sure the kids are dressed warm. The grade 4 teacher is a big fan of Homework Haven. It's done a lot for some of her students.
Like their self-esteem, like their interest in school is improved, because I guess knowing that between the parents and like Steve and the other staff at Homework Haven and the teachers in the school, they know that we're all trying to help them strive for, I guess, success.
Back at Homework Haven, parents are singing praise as well. Dale Turt is a single mom with 5 kids. Her daughter Amber has been coming here for 3 years. She says she appreciates the one-on-one help her daughter gets here.
Because where I have 4 other children, I can't sit for an hour, hour and a half with each child. So having a program like this is awesome.
Huxter says success is the ultimate goal, but that can be measured in different ways. One of his proudest accomplishments has been watching a particular student beat the odds against him.
50% of students, I guess, that are from this area, not just this area, but from low-income housing areas, 50% do not get past grade 10. So to see him right now in grade 11 and potentially graduating next year is something that is a benefit for me and the community center in general.
Oh, yeah, Sam.
There's a healthy snack every day after the kids finish homework. Today it's juice and granola bars. A volunteer gets it all set up in the kitchen before the crowd rushes in.
Thank you. Bye. You're
welcome. There are two part-time teachers at Homework Haven, but Huckster says they're always looking for volunteers. He himself puts in more time than the 40 hours a week for which he's paid, but he says he doesn't mind. In fact, his face lights up when he talks about the kids who come here.
I want to see these kids not only just complete their high school, which normally doesn't happen, but I want to see some of these kids get post-secondary education where maybe some of them become teachers, lawyers, whatever they want to be, whether it be just going out and getting a being a pet vet or whatever. As long as they get something that benefits them and that they're passionate about, that's what's important to me.
Huckster says the program really pushes education, but he hopes the kids learn to be strong, confident, good people as well. In Cornerbrook, I'm Sherry Wheeler.
What do you want to drink, Alex? You can have your sack now.
That's it for this week. You can get in touch with us at cbc.ca by clicking Contact Us. Throughout the week, check out stories from around Newfoundland and Labrador at cbc.ca/nl. I'm John Soper. Talk to you next week.
For more on all of our CBC podcasts, head to cbc.ca/podcasting.